But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to CityWire. I am senior ETF journalist Noor Azhar. On today's show, we are focusing on a pair of major regulation from the UK Financial Conduct Authority that will reshape the ETF and digital assets landscape. The FCA is currently conducting a major multi-firm review into complex ETPs, which is exchange-traded products, and under the new Consumer Duty, a move set to redefine product governance. And in a landmark reversal, they're about to lift the ban on the sale of crypto exchange-traded notes, or ETNs, to retail consumers on October 8, bringing in new products onto regulated UK exchanges. To break down these shifts and to explain what they mean for firms and consumers, I'm joined by Kate Tuckley, the Head of Department for Consumer Investments at the UK Financial Conduct Authority. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
We've got two major topics that we want to explore today, the ETP review and obviously the lifting of the crypto ban. So the first thing is, for those who may not be familiar with your role, could you just briefly explain what do you do at the FCA?
Sure. So I'm head of department in the Consumer Investments Division, and I'm specifically responsible for the supervision of a couple of our portfolios, so investment platforms, SIP operators. I deal with crowdfunders and peer-to-peer, and I've got a few proactive teams.
Now, obviously, the FCA has been very busy regulator lately. And two of the most significant developments for our audience are the complex ETP review and the lifting of the crypto ban. What is the, if you take me through, what is the overarching sort of philosophy behind these two seemingly different initiatives?
Yeah, very happy to. So I think it's important, though, that we give a little bit of context, I think, to the ETP market, which is a growth sector. So very exciting in that regard. It's also a little bit of alphabet soup in there. So apologies in advance for the acronyms. But just to set it in context, obviously, exchange traded products they're traded on a recognized investment exchange, such as the LSE. The primary feature of them is that they track an underlying asset or group of assets or an index. And within that umbrella term, you've got three different types. So you've got exchange traded funds, which will track a group of securities or an index like the FTSE 100. You've got exchange traded commodities, which will track price of a commodity like gold, and you've got exchange traded notes, which are a hot topic because of the lifting of the ban that you've just talked about, which we can go into in more detail as you like. But that will track the underlying asset of a specific asset. So in that case, crypto. We're specifically interested in our multi-firm work in complex ETPs. Now, there's no clear definition for what constitutes a complex ETP. So we're interested in finding out how firms determine what might be complex. But generally speaking, it involves a complex or sophisticated strategy that will increase the risk of the product. So for example, one such example would be leverage. So leverage obviously is a very good thing because it can amplify the returns, but obviously conversely, it can amplify losses. And we're interested to understand, you know, what consumers understand about that. The other important feature of complex ETPs is the fact that they reset daily. And this is obviously extremely interesting because, again, we have concerns that consumers don't understand the impact of that, in particular, where they're holding onto those products for longer than one day. And holding onto those products for longer than one day can cause a divergence in what the consumer might expect from the price of the underlying asset in comparison with the returns on the ETP. So we're really interested as part of our multi-firm work at looking at how consumers are holding those complex ETPs and how prevalent they are and how long they are holding them for. And obviously, importantly, how well they understand the risks involved in that. Yeah. And another just a quick point that I wanted to draw out, because I think it's quite important, is that complex ETPs are a small part of the broader ETP market, small but importantly growing part of the market. And a good stat that I can give you is that in August 2025, from LSE data that we had, three of the top 10 traded ETPs, which includes complex and non-complex, involved these leveraged ETPs at times three, which is obviously highly volatile. So that's the context to the multi-firm work that we're doing. We're really interested in how consumers are, you know, approaching those products, their understanding, and the support that firms giving them. So that's the multi-firm work. And we're looking at that very clearly through the lens of the consumer duty.
So is it safe to say that because of the increasing usage of these products, that's what led the FCA to look into them?
So it's definitely a big factor. So increasing use of ETPs is actually quite astounding. The first ETP came on the market, I think, in 2000. And, you know, that was the first one. Now there are over 2,000 different types of ETPs. And I think in 2024, 270 ETPs were added as new products. So you can see there the sort of huge interest that we have from retail consumers. So there's a sort of the consumer interest, which is one aspect. Also, I would say consumers' attitude to these products, and they're constantly looking for higher risk investments and returns. Some of our financial lives survey data has shown that I think it's 8.4% of adult consumers hold high risk investments. But interestingly, only one in four actually understand or are willing to take the risks. And some have no willingness to take risk at all. So that's quite an interesting sort of backdrop to our work as well. So, and then a final reason I would say is the increasing trading apps and obviously low commission investment platforms, which makes trading much more accessible for the younger generation and new consumers. So there's lots of different reasons I would say while we're doing that review. Also because it's 2 years on since we rolled out the consumer duty. We really want to see how firms are implementing it and embedding it in their processes. And, you know, this is all with a view to align with our strategy, which is about boosting growth, embedding trust, and rebalancing risk. So
obviously you've mentioned consumer duty, and yes, it came into effect in 2023. So it's been 2 years, but so how would, you know, within that sort of complex ETP review, how would firms distributing these products, how can they prove that they are providing or delivering good outcomes and fair value to their clients?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So at the moment, you know, we don't have a preconceived view of what's happening in the market. The work that we're doing is very much discovery-led. We want to have a really good holistic view of what's going on. We obviously do have some concerns, which, you know, I've highlighted around the resetting of the daily price on the leveraged ETPs that we'll look into. But we're going to look at it through the lens of the consumer duty. So as your listeners will be aware, there are the four outcomes linked to the consumer duty. So we have the products and services outcome. There we'll be interested in how firms are looking at the target market for these complex ETPs. You know, how are they looking at the skills, experience, and knowledge of consumers that might invest in those ETPs. We'll also be looking at consumer understanding. Do they understand the pricing models, which can be quite intricate in some of these products? Do they clearly understand the risks, in particular the risk around the daily reset and the leverage? That's really important to us. fair value. You've just touched on absolutely critical to the duty. You know, how are firms assessing whether they are giving fair value? What does it say in their frameworks around that? How are they looking at? It's not just price. Obviously, we're not regulating price, but we're looking at the real value to the consumer that they're marketing it to. And then finally, obviously, the fourth outcome is customer support. And that is looking at how are firms helping consumers give meaningful support so that they're getting clear, accessible information. They're monitoring outcomes. And if they see outcomes for consumers that are not good, how are they addressing that? What are they doing with those customers? How are they reaching out to them? And in particular, customers that are vulnerable, that's really important to us as well.
Yeah.
So we'll be looking at it through all of those lenses. And if firms have thought about all of those things, you know, we'll be really pleased to see that and see the good practice that might be out there.
Yeah. And you've said that there isn't a universal sort of definition. Will the FCA look at defining what complex ETPs are?
Potentially, I think, I think I've already given a bit of an outline of what it is. And I think it is broadly understood in the industry, but that's something that we might think about.
Obviously, you've mentioned that the review is going to be multi-firm, and you've already asked a few firms to provide some sort of examples. Have there been any sort of poor practices that you've seen in distributing these products? And, you know, what would you consider as a poor example or a good example?
Well, as I said, I can't give you a specific example at the moment because we're still going through that work. We've just got a lot of information in, which is really great. A lot of data points that we're looking at. So as I said, we've got an open mind. We don't have a preconceived view of the outcomes. So I can't draw out any specific examples, but we'll make sure that when we put our comms out, which will be, I think, early next year, that we do draw out those good and poor examples for industry. I think it's important.
Yeah. Now, Kate, obviously, you know, as a journalist, I speak to sort of, you know, lots of people in the industry about ETFs and ETPs and crypto and all that kind of, all these products. And there are people in the industry who feel that these products are not fundamentally bad and the responsibility should really be on the investor to understand the risks. How would the FCA balance the investor responsibility with the firm's duty of care?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You have to look at both sides of the coin. I think from our perspective, obviously we regulate the firms, not the investors. Mm. So, you know, we're really keen on ensuring that firms have the right systems and controls in place. They're complying with the duty. But also, you know, that they are encouraging access to investors. And, you know, a big part of our strategy at the moment is rebalancing risk and deepening trust. We want people to be able to access investments that are right for them at the right time, having the right information. You know, we're very supportive of that. And so I think, you know, we will look at it through that lens as well. Are consumers getting those right outcomes? Are these products right for them? Or are there things that we can share with industry that will help and develop their thinking when they're selling and distributing these products? Because more and more consumers are accessing investments without advice, you know, via direct-to-consumer platforms. Absolutely. So, I think that's where the role of the distributor is absolutely key in making sure, as I said, the information is there and that those consumers have got the right support. It's a growth sector, one we want to encourage. But obviously, we also have the lens of making sure we improve consumers' lives as part of our strategy, making sure the right protections are in place.
Kate, if we talk about the other topic, which is the lifting of the crypto, the lifting the crypto ban for retail investors. So obviously, in 2021, the FCA was very clear that crypto ETNs were ill-suited for retail investors. And, you know, you've stated that investors should be prepared to lose all their money. What has changed since then in the market to, I guess, prompt this significant policy reversal?
A very good question. Just to sort of clarify again, crypto ETN, as I said, is an unsecured debt instrument that tracks the value of the underlying asset, which in this case is the crypto. And that would be, for example, Bitcoin. So traded on a recognized investment exchange like the LSE. And you're absolutely right. We have lifted the ban on access to crypto ETNs for retail consumers. And that is really because the market has evolved. In short, the market has evolved in sophistication, in consumer demand. As I said earlier, consumers are really seeking out high risk strategies at the moment. There is a plethora of products, as I've touched on already, availability of crypto products out there. And it's important that we recognize that. Also, more generally, we've, in response to that, we've strengthened our regulatory remit over crypto by introducing financial promotions regime for crypto, not crypto ETNs, yes. crypto assets, yeah. And also money laundering regulations there in response to the shift that we're seeing. But now taking things all in the round and looking at where we're at, we decided it was the right thing to do to lift that ban on retail access to crypto ETNs. And we're really pleased to have done that. We think it's really important to boost the growth of the UK's crypto industry, but to do it in a way, as I said earlier, that protects consumers as well. So that's the thinking behind it at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you have your own research, consumer research, and some of the data is that around 12% or 7 million adults in the UK own crypto assets. Mm-hmm. And that's up from around 4.4% or 2.2 million in 2021. Is that data, was that helpful in understanding how the consumers are thinking about crypto and allowing you to come to that conclusion that you need to lift it?
Absolutely. As you know, at the moment, we're endeavouring to be a smarter regulator, which means we are very data-led and increasingly data-led. We ask a lot from our firms in terms of data, and we try and use it and share it back with industry so you can see our insights. But the Financial Life Survey, obviously where we go out to lots of consumers, is really rich in data. So yes, absolutely, we use that data to help decide on our priorities, for horizon scanning and looking at emerging risks, but also seeing whether our regulation is in the right place, that we've got the balance of risk, supporting growth and innovation alongside consumer protection.
Now, the lifting of the ban is contingent on the ETNs being traded on a UK-based recognised investment exchange. How does this, I guess, this requirement provide a layer of protection for investors?
Well, obviously, recognised investment exchanges like the LSE are overseen by us as a regulator, and also they have equivalent consumer protections baked in. So it gives us some grip, it gives us visibility, and that's one of the key reasons. The other reason, that we've focused on this specific crypto ETN sort of category as opposed to derivatives and other crypto ETN is obviously the use of the prospectus regime and the listing rules, which give us additional grip over those crypto ETNs. So that's really why we've done
it. You've mentioned the derivatives, which is I'm going to ask you. Can you explain the difference for retail investors between an ETN and a crypto derivative and why the ban on derivatives still remains in place?
So for us, the derivatives are still a higher risk product than a crypto ETN. As I mentioned earlier, crypto ETN is traded on a recognized exchange, which is overseen by us. And it has to, when you list, you have to go through our listing rules and the prospectus regime to enable you to do that, which we think gives us a layer of grip, but also consumer an added layer of comfort and reassurance, I would say. Crypto derivatives we view as much higher risk products. We think that the leverage within those products can be significant, and that also differentiates them. So those are the main reasons really for not including crypto derivatives and crypto ETNs that are not on recognized investment exchanges at the moment. But as part of our broader crypto roadmap, and the fact that the market is continually evolving, we will obviously keep that under review as we go forward, anticipating that there will be quite a lot of interest in crypto ETNs when it, you know, when they're allowed to retail from 8th of October, so very soon.
Yeah, you know, I spoke to, you know, quite a few people, and they think that the UK will have, you know, sort of a boom market once the ban is lifted. Do you, you know, was there an element of fear of missing out and being left behind, the UK being left behind, you know, while you've got other markets like Germany, Switzerland leading the space? Was that, is that element, did that play into the FCA's decision?
I mean, we always look to what our international sort of partner agencies, equivalent agencies are doing. That, you know, goes without saying that we would do that. And we did really want to boost the UK's competitiveness and the UK's crypto industry competitiveness. It's a very important factor to us. But also all of those factors that I've also talked about. So the fact that it's more well understood, the fact that there is the consumer demand, that there is a plethora and availability of these products, also have played into it. So it certainly wasn't the sole reason.
Mm-hmm. What specific suitability, I guess, you know, checks that firms will have to do now on retail clients before they allow them to invest?
So there's appropriateness test, but also the crypto ETN. One of the key protection that we've said for a crypto ETN and lifting the ban on the sale, distribution and marketing of them is that we are saying they should be classified as restricted mass market investments. Mm-hmm. And that's really important because that goes to the level of risk disclosures that need to be incorporated when distributing those products, but also it prevents inappropriate incentives to push consumers into those products. So those are important regulatory points. Also, the duty obviously does apply to the crypto ETN. So, you know, the products and services, consumer understanding, consumer support, as I've talked about before. Mm.
And you've been very clear that there is no FSCS protection for these products. So what's your message? What's the FCA's message to retail investors considering investing in crypto ETNs on October 8th?
So we would say, you know, we're very pleased to lift the ban on crypto ETNs for retail consumers. We think it's the right time to do that. We think it's in line with our strategy, which is to deepen trust, rebalance risk, improve lives and support growth. Absolutely. This is part of that strategy and goes towards it. But we would also say crypto ETNs are high-risk investments, as are the underlying assets, the crypto assets themselves. So we do, in that sense, we've added these protections around the distribution of them. And we would like consumers to go into them with the knowledge that there are risks and they could lose a lot of money. And that's why we haven't said at the moment that FSCS coverage would be available. And there are two key reasons as well that support that. The first is that we think it might encourage, you know, it might incentivize consumers to invest in a high-risk area that's not right for them, because they might think, well, I'll get fully compensated if things go wrong down the line. So it's to discourage those poor incentives. But the second key point on FSCS coverage, FSCS coverage is that the market around these products at the moment is still developing. There are risks, and also there could be a big impact on the financial exposure for the FSCS if a lot of crypto firms were to fail. And so for all of those reasons in the round, we've decided that that's not the right thing to do at the moment.
Looking at both the complex ETP review and the crypto ban, and it seems that the FCA is trying to create a framework for innovation and also for, I guess, prioritizing consumer protection, which is what you do. But how do, you know, if you're looking at the broader FCA strategic goals for the UK financial markets, how do these two reviews, how do these two sort of initiatives fit into that?
Well, I mean, they're very different. So one is a piece of multi-firm discovery work where we're, you know, really looking to see get full rounded picture of what's happening in the market at the moment using the lens of the consumer duty. So it's a growth sector. You know, we hope to be able to put out messages that support that sector, but also, you know, give examples, as you said, potentially of poorer practice as well as good practice to really help develop that industry for the benefit of consumers, but also industry too. So work very much in collaboration. And then the lifting of the crypto ETN ban for retail. We again think that's really important for competitiveness, but we've added in those consumer protections. So they're very complementary. And I think the other point I would say is they're also complementary to another bit of work that we're doing. And in fact, the multi-firm work we're doing will feed into it, which is we're looking at consumer access to retail investments more generally and our regulatory framework and seeing whether it's actually driving good customer outcomes altogether, and also whether it's supporting a healthy investment culture. So we're really interested in that. And there's a broader bit of work going on alongside that the multi-firm work will feed into, actually. And we'll be looking as part of that at all of the products, the tools, and the risk mitigation strategies that we have and seeing whether they're right for consumers at the moment or whether we need to do any more rebalancing or any more sort of work with industry to, as I said, to improve outcomes.
Yeah. Can I ask you, I mean, just in regard of that, is have you been working with crypto asset managers, with sort of those sort of firms that provide these products? Have you been working closely to see what their opinion, what they've been doing?
Well, absolutely. And that's the way that we work on these multi-firm projects, so on the complex ETP project. You know, we do ask for data, and that's really important, and it helps us focus our questions and reduce the burden on firms. But also, it's absolutely vital that they have the opportunity to talk to us, tell us what they're seeing, what they're doing, why they're doing it, talk us through their customer journeys to help really bring those products to life. We find that invaluable. It's so important to us. So yes, it's a very collaborative process, and we hope will be a benefit to industry as well as consumers with the results of that multi-firm work. On the broader piece of work, which relates to consumer access to investments more generally, we will be doing a lot of engagement on that. We will be putting out some communications on that and then engaging very closely with stakeholders as well across the consumer investment space. So obviously I'm responsible for investment platforms and SIP operators. My other colleagues are responsible for advisors and the big wealth managers. And then we've also got the asset managers as well. So yes, very, very broad range of engagement, I think you can see. And we're trying at the moment as an organization, hopefully you'll have seen that at Citywire, to get out and about a lot more and engage and listen. And hopefully you'll see that reflected in some of the communications that we put out.
Yeah. Well, that's great to have you here. Thank you, Kate, for your time and insight. Really appreciate it. This was Kate Tuckley, the Head of Department for Consumer Investment at the UK Financial Conduct Authority. I am Noor Azhar. Thank you for joining me.
Today is VE Day. The boys
the
are
crowned queen. From the Bell.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.